My name is Stephanie Butler. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I am grateful to Yvonne and Billy and the sign language folks and anybody that's put this together and passed out these flyers, because I think this is a wonderful way for us to connect and to heal. And that's what this is about. I'm coming to you from a little town, Granite Shoals, and I'm kind of in the heart of Texas. And that's where we're going to be talking today. I am so excited because I realized when I was thinking about how I was organizing my thoughts, I thought, well, it's going to be just like the grief process. There's no, you know, you can't start and stop. You go up and you down and you begin and you go back and you start again. And I thought, so my talk's going to fit right in with that. Today, I'm sharing my experience. The one thing I know about grief is that it's an individual experience. The other thing I know that by sharing it, we really connect with each other. And so it's like it's universal and it's individual all at the same time. There's no rules. There's no right or wrong. There's no, script. There's nothing. It is just going to be yours. I want to tell you that what I realized was in cultures years ago, if there was a death in the family, people dressed in black. So you knew that there was grief going on then, and people would be very respectful. We don't have that today. People don't know that your heart is broken. People don't know that there's cracks in your heart. And if you will share, then someone can hold your hand, or somebody can say, I understand, or, you know, we can be there for each other. The other thing I realized is that the word grief is nowhere in our early literature. One Day at a Time, which is our daily reader in Al-Anon, does not even have grief in the index. And I started thinking about that, and I thought, you know, it's only more recently, over the last few years, that people have been talking about our real feelings. And that grief is not a punishment. And most of all, it's not just about death. There is so much when you say the word grief. I get excited. I mean, I'm not excited about loss, but I am excited about the fact that this is a deep sorrow. That's what grief is. It is a deep sorrow, and it is and the way we heal is as we do in any of our 12-step rooms by sharing our experience, strength, and hope. So I started thinking about how I was going to do this, and I thought, well, you know, bottom line, most of us know that there are the five, symptoms, I don't know if that's what, of grief. There is the denial, the anger, the bargaining, and the accept. Wait, I forgot one. I'll tell you in just a minute. Oh, yeah. How about acceptance? There's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Now, the interesting thing about that is that those are what we would call the components of a grief process. They are not in order. There is no order. That's one of the things that I've learned through this program and through sharing with y'all and with my sponsor. There's no one day you're okay and the next day you're depressed and the next day you're angry. And, you know, that's why I'm so grateful we're talking about grief today. We are starting the conversation. When you don't know how you feel, when you say, I think I'm crazy, or, oh my gosh, I'm having trouble breathing, or I can't sleep at night, I don't know what's wrong with me. This is the place where we start looking at the strong emotion of grief. As with everything, it is a threefold emotion. It will be physical, emotional, and spiritual, as it is with all of our recovery. So I thought this morning I might share with you a little bit about my story, and pull out the times and the experiences of the grief. I wasn't raised in an alcoholic home. My parents were social drinkers. I was raised in a home where your feelings were not expressed. they were not validated. It was never okay to be angry, never okay to be happy, never okay to be sad. We were just fine. That's just what we were. We were just fine. My mother had a sign in the front yard. And that's what we did. And so I didn't have any experience with any feelings that came up for me. It was all shoved down. It was just like, you're okay. Remember, you're okay. And I grew up in that home with some beliefs. One of them was, if you do good, you get good. And so I lived my life in fear. I was scared to death of making a mistake. The other thing was, I looked at you and you looked so put together and I felt so less than. So those are some of the characteristics that I brought into adulthood. And one of the things I know is that when you don't express any feelings, that's almost as detrimental as being raised in a home where your feelings are rage and where people are expressing things. Years ago, we took our daughter to a psychologist and we said, fix her. She was breaking all the rules. She was acting out. And of course, we weren't looking at Bill's drinking. We were just really aware that she was our problem. And this psychologist said to us, of the three of you, Bill, I think you might have a drinking problem. Stephanie, I think you're crying too all the time. You just cry all the time. And Laura, she's the healthiest of the three of you. And we went, what? And he said, she's expressing her feelings. She's not doing it appropriately, but you know how she feels. Well, in my home of origin, nobody knew how anybody felt. We were always just fine. So as I went to high school, I met the fellow that I fell in love with. His name is Bill. We dated through high school and through college, and we were married after we both graduated. I was a teacher and loved teaching. Bill had a job he loved. We were living in Austin, Texas, and it was a glorious time for us. And then I started paying attention because Bill started drinking. And if you asked him, he would say, I didn't start drinking till I married you. And so in hindsight, I would think, well, yeah, I probably would have had to take a drink too if I was married to me. But so what I realized is that he's drinking and I'm teaching school. I'm counting these drinks because that's not what we did in my family of origin. After we had been married for 3 years, we had a beautiful daughter. Her name is Laura. And 21 months later, we had our son, Wes. And this is what I consider to be just the perfect time. We have two beautiful, healthy children. And I got to be a teacher, which I love. And I'm married to the man I love. And I get to be a stay-at-home mom. So I am. Oh, by the way, I have to tell you that sign that my mom had in her front yard, I brought to my front yard. I put it in my front yard that said, we are fine. Thank you very much. And I made sure we looked it. You know, it was not okay. I wanted Laura. Laura did have, she was born angry. And then she would say, no, I wasn't, Mom. I was fine till Wes was born. But anyway, she was doing all the acting out for us. And I wanted her to sit down and behave just like I did as a child. I followed all the rules. I did what I was supposed to do because I was scared. I don't know if I would. I think somehow or another it got put in my brain that I was afraid. I don't know if I was afraid of my parents or of God or what I was afraid of, but I remember the fear. I also know that in that home of origin where I grew up, I saw my mama get mad at my daddy one time. She walked out, slammed the door, got in the car, and drove off. I, at that moment, thought, don't make anybody mad. That's the only time I ever saw any emotion expressed in my home. And so when Laura started acting out, it was like, oh my gosh, she can't do that. It's not right. We're going to fall apart. She's going to leave. What are we going to do? I worked really hard at trying to get her to behave. I worked really hard at counting Bill's drinks. I worked really hard at being the best soccer mom there was for this son of ours that was playing sports. And I was tired, but I was keeping track. I had to keep track of everything. It was pretty critical. Now, but I wouldn't tell you that. I would just put a smile on my face and say, we're just great. We're just doing great. And I have to tell you a little story. We had a border collie. Her name was Flopsy. She was the cutest, most beautiful dog you ever saw. And she became pregnant. And so I decided that I wanted to shampoo her for our delivery day because I had nothing else to do. So anyway, I shampoo Flopsy. And after I shampoo her, I read on the bottle because I remember sometimes dogs run and dry and sometimes you towel dry them. And I wanted to do it right. So I read on the bottle and it said, do not use on pregnant dogs. Oh my gosh, what have I done? So I called the vet and I said, Dr. Pigott, what have I done? He said, don't worry, in a couple of weeks, those puppies will be born. Yes, 2 weeks passed and the first puppy was born and it was born dead. And I called Dr. Pigott and I said, I have killed this litter of puppies. And he said, that's just one. Let's wait and see. Over the course of the day, Flopsy had 7 puppies. I called Dr. Pigott after every puppy. And I said, but Dr. Pigott, we have a healthy one. He'd go, oh, Stephanie, that's good. And then an hour later, Dr. Pigott, we have 5 now, 5. Oh, that's good. So the 7th puppy was born and it had trouble breathing. And so I called Dr. Pigott. Dr. Pigott, this puppy can't breathe. I don't know what to do. And he said, do you have any alcohol in your home? Yes. And he said, take some, put it on the end of a spoon and put it in the puppy's throat and massage it down the puppy's throat. That will break up all of that phlegm. And I said, okay, I think I can do it. And he said, and then Stephanie, sit down and drink the rest of that bottle. Even the vet knew that I needed to take a drink. Even the vet knew that there was something wrong with me. You don't call a vet 10 times a day to tell him about your puppy's deliveries. And, you know, if I could have, I would have. I needed something to relieve this anxiety and this emotions that were all caught up inside of me. And I had no idea what it was. I was watching Bill's drinking escalate. I was watching Laura just break rule after rule. I was watching Wes trying to keep it all together. And I was so tired. At one point, our daughter needed some jaw surgery. She had a very protruding chin. She's beautiful. But sometimes when she sang, her jaws would lock open. So she had to go in for jaw surgery. And they did. They cracked the bone, scooted it back, and wired her mouth shut. I love that part. But there, sitting in the hospital room, I had my first moment of clarity. I was there. Bill was passed out at home. I started to pay attention. I was doing this marriage and this family all by myself. And I was exhausted. I was confused. I was hurt. And what I did was I cried. I couldn't tell you how I felt. I couldn't get mad at Bill. I got mad at the children. I did that sideways anger thing because having emotions wasn't good, but I knew I couldn't get mad at him. So in July of 1985, I told Bill, you either have to leave or you have to get sober. He was pretty happy to leave. Not really, but he said, I'm leaving, but because I can't live with you anymore. And I thought, I don't even care why. I just need you to go. And so 2 or 3 days later, one of his friends called him. He said, Stephanie, I understand you kicked Butler out. And I said, he's drinking. There's something wrong with him. And I don't even know what it is. And he said, well, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd like to take you to a meeting. Will you go with me? And so on July the 24th of 1985, I went to my very first Al-Anon meeting. I was so tired. You know, in retrospect, I think we should have a sign above our door that says, are you tired? If so, come in and take a seat. If not, go out and manage and control some more. I was exhausted. And you know what? Exhaustion is one of the signs of grief. That's a part of this. You're so tired. You don't even know why. And I was, and what I did was I cried. So I sat in that first meeting and I cried, but I heard things that changed my life. You told me that alcoholism was a disease. My husband had a disease. I had been fussing at him for years. Just put it down. What is the matter? I had no idea that I was dealing with a disease. And then you told me that it was a family disease. And you told me that if I had raised children in an alcoholic home, I had raised sick kids. I didn't think I could stand it. It broke my heart. Then you said the one thing that I needed to hear, which was you did the best you could at the time. If somebody had said to me, you are living in a disease and here's what you need to do, I would have done it. I'm a rule follower. Give me something. I had no idea I was living in and dealing with a disease. You also heard, I heard you say, you need to get a sponsor. You need to go to meetings. You need to read the literature and you need to work the steps. And so being the rule follower that I am, I said, you got it. What do I need to do? The one thing that happened at that time for me was I cried all the time. Y'all wanted my first name and I couldn't give it to you. I mean, you'd say, could we have your name? And I'd go, and you'd say, just keep coming back. Just keep coming back. And the love and the, but I just knew this was a safe place. I didn't know what was going to happen. I just knew I had no other choice. I couldn't live that way anymore. And so I got me a sponsor. Her name is Blanche. Wow. What a gift she was in my life. That beautiful Blanche. She took me and held me and loved me. She was the first person to ever love me unconditionally. She said, it's okay to feel the way you feel. And I said, well, I'm fine. And she said, well, you can keep saying that if you want to. But if you keep denying your feelings, they're just going to continue. Being fine does not, feeling fine does not make you feel any better. It's just a word. The greatest gift, and Blanche gave me so many, was that she introduced me to a loving higher power. She said, I don't know what you think you're afraid of, but let me tell you some things about what I believe to be true about this loving higher power. He loves you unconditionally. You can't earn it and you can't make it go away. It's called grace. She told me that he can't do bad. I thought when I sat in that meeting the first time, I must have done something terribly wrong because I had been following all the rules and I'm sitting in the midst of a bunch of strangers crying and bills left. And so I thought I had broken the rules and I was being punished. And Blanche said, God doesn't do that. It goes against his character. He can't. He loves you. So every time we would get together, Blanche would remind me how much she loved me and how much this higher power loved me. 2 weeks after I went to my first Al-Anon meeting, Bill called and said he was trying to sober himself up and he couldn't and he needed help. And so Bill went to his first AA meeting on August the 6th of 1985. Now, I would tell you that that's all I wanted. All I ever said was if he'd just stop drinking, we're going to be fine. If he just stops drinking. Well, you know, he started working the AA 12 steps. He started living that sober life. I'm doing my Al-Anon to the best of my ability, working with Blanche, going to meetings and reading the literature and just feeling so loved and welcomed. And I'm not going to die and I'm not alone. You told me I'd never have to do anything alone again. Oh, I felt so isolated before I showed up. But the one thing that happened was that I didn't stop crying. Bill got sober. That's all I wanted. I didn't stop crying. So one day I said to Blanche, "What's wrong with me? I can't stop crying." And she said, "You are grieving the loss of a dream." For the very first time in my life, the word grief was introduced to me. "You are grieving the loss of a dream." She said, "You never intended for your family to be held in the grips of alcoholism." So that was the first time that I heard the word. And then Blanche and I start working those steps. And we start, and Bill and I, we have a communication now. We have a common language. It is just a beautiful, beautiful time in our lives. And then we have Laura. And I'll tell you what, that gal's really something, but she just did not like a drinking daddy. She really didn't like a sober daddy. So Laura's a senior in high school. She's broken some rules. We've grounded her. She decides she wants to go to a University of Texas baseball game. We said yes. Be home on Sunday by 6. She said yes. Sunday at 6 came and she didn't come home. So Laura was gone Monday. Laura's gone Tuesday. I'm calling Blanche, and Blanche is saying things to me like, "You know God loves Laura more than you do." And I said, "I'm really glad, because I'm going to kill her when I find her." And then she said, "We're just going to pray for her." That's what we do now. We pray. I go to my Al-Anon meetings, and you were saying things to me like, "What would you be doing if this weren't happening?" I said, "You don't understand. It is happening. I'm scared. I don't know what to do. Why is this daughter ruining my fine picture?" So she was gone for a week. And during that week, I had gone back to teaching, and I was getting in the car, and I had a moment of clarity one more time where the words came to me, "If what you're doing isn't working, try something different." And I thought, I have been trying to love this daughter well. It's not working. So then she calls on the Friday of that week, and she wants to come home. And by the grace of God, and it's truly God doing for me what I could not do for myself, I said to her, "I love you and you can't come home." Now, talk about having your feelings. This daughter of mine had her feelings. She was rageful. She was so angry. And I said, "I love you and you can't come home." It really was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. The next morning, Saturday, I'm on my knees crying, screaming, "Oh my gosh, what have I done? What have I done?" I understand today that it was God working in my life. So a month went by. I thought, she's a senior in high school. And I think God just wants everybody to graduate from high school. So I'm trying to find her, get her back in school, get her graduated, anything that I can do along those lines. I have no idea. Can't get her. Can't find her. So Bill's in the process of trying to find a treatment center that would help an angry teenager, because that's definitely what we had. And he found one. And so I found that Laura, I could call Laura one day, and I called her and said, "If you want help, we have a place." And so she agreed. Now talk about grief. When we went to pick up our daughter, I grieved. It was like mourning what couldn't be. This beautiful daughter of ours was a mess. She didn't even look like our Laura. And I am crying all the way to Denton. And I, at the time, I didn't understand that. And then after I could talk with Blanche, I realized I am mourning what couldn't be. Laura wasn't going to graduate from high school. Laura wasn't going to, all the things Laura wasn't. So we drop her off in Denton. 3 days later, she calls and she says, "Mom, I need to ask you a question." I said, "Fine." She said, "How would you feel about me being an alcoholic?" I said, "Whatever 12-step program you want to latch on to, it's fine with me." She said, "Mom, I've been inventorying my drinking and I have a drinking problem. I'm an alcoholic." Well, this past April the 6th, our beautiful daughter celebrated 33 years of sobriety. I'm telling you, I mourned that day I drove her there. And today I am so grateful for that day that I drove her there. She not only graduated by correspondence, but she became a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. What a gift. What a gift. You know, sometimes, in fact, I think all the time, but I better not say that because all's a pretty big word. I think we walk through the darkness to get to the light. And I think Laura being gone was such a dark time. I just didn't know what was going to happen. And I was grieving the loss of this beautiful daughter. And we go through that process. And on the other side, look what we have. Oh, so filled with gratitude. And so Wes is graduating from high school. And so he's a freshman at the University of Texas now. Laura's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're all in Austin. We have open AA meetings. I hold hands with Laura and Bill. And I continue to cry. But this time it's tears of gratitude. Thank you, God. We have a family healing. So Bill comes home one day and he says, "Hey, Steph, how would you like to move to Virginia?" And I said, "Why would we do that?" And he said, "I'm tired of getting on airplanes." And I said, "Okay," because houses in Austin, Texas in 1990, they weren't selling. So I didn't think we were going anywhere. And God said, "Well, okay." So our home sold in 2 weeks. And so I guess we're going to Virginia. So what do? I sit in the middle of our den floor and I cry like a baby. It's my go-to emotion. And people are coming in, "What's the matter?" I can't leave. I can't leave our children. I can't leave my sponsor. I can't leave my meetings. And Stephanie, you know what you have in Austin, Texas. Why don't you go see what they have in Reston, Virginia? And you know what? They have Al-Anon in Reston, Virginia. They don't do it right, but they have Al-Anon in Reston, Virginia. So talk about grief. Oh my gosh, leaving our children, leaving our home, leaving my fellowship, leaving my Blanche. I cried, but I remember what that fella said to me. "Look and see what they have in Virginia." So I went through the darkness of the grief of letting go of our home. And what was so familiar, it's just loss, and we move into another space. Oh my gosh, Bill and I have a ball. He's got an AA group he loves. I have an Al-Anon group I love. I'm teaching school. Reston, Virginia is beautiful. We have a big book study in our home every Wednesday night. I mean, it was a glorious time in our experience. I'm so grateful for that. I went through the grief of leaving and got to the joy of receiving. So now I'm just, this is just great. And we love this. So anyway, Laura calls and she says, "Mom, I need to tell you something." And I said, "What?" And she said, "I saw Wes passed out last night." I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, Mom, he's passed." I said, "No." She said, "I said, he saw you lose your home from alcoholism. He saw your daddy nearly die of alcoholism. Wes is not going to take a drink." She said, "Mom, Lon and I took Wes to his first AA meeting today." Oh my gosh. I called Blanche. I said, "Blanche, how many miracles does one family get? I think we're using ours all up." So now we are indeed a family in recovery. What more could I ask for? And I'm going to the meetings and I'm sharing the joy and I feel the feelings it's okay to feel. You gave me permission in Al-Anon to feel what you feel. Get it, say it, talk about it, get it said. And so I am doing that. I get a call from Laura and she says, "Mom, I need to ask you something." I said, "What?" And she said, "Well, I really need to just tell you." And I said, "Tell me." She said, "I'm pregnant." I said, "No, you're not." She said, "Mama, I'm going to have a baby." I said, "No, you're not." She said, "Mother." I said, "Laura, first you have the wedding, then you have the baby. You didn't have a wedding. You are not having a baby." She said, do you want me to give it up for adoption? I said, no. Do you want me to have an abortion? I said, no. She said, what do you want? I said, I want for you to not be pregnant. Blanche said that that was one of my unavailable options. So here I go. I go grieving one more time. How on earth can what? This is not how it's supposed to be. The loss of a dream, grieving my expectations for how my family is going to look. I cry and I don't tell anybody. This is not right. I still have that character defect of judging things. And so after one of our big book study meetings, people were leaving and our friend Rita, she stayed and she said, Stephanie, are you okay? I said, nope. I said, it's horrible. It is just horrible. And she said, what? And I said, well, I just almost can't tell you what. I said, Laura's pregnant. She went, really? I said, oh, Rita, you don't understand. She's not married. Rita said, why are you judging that and finding it lacking? It's just what is. Wow. It just what is. On June the 6th of 1992, the most beautiful what is was born. Ah, her name is Stephanie Grace, a beautiful baby girl. One of the happiest days of my life. And I would have missed it because it didn't look right. It didn't fit into my expectations. Bill was there sober. Wes was there sober. I was there crying. And we didn't need a marriage. We didn't need a wedding license to have this marriage license, to have this baby brought into the world. She's beautiful. She's just beautiful. I'll tell you a little story about Grace real quickly. She was in second grade. And the teacher asked everybody to introduce themselves. And Grace stands up and she says, my name is Grace. I'm an alcoholic and I've got 7 years of sobriety. She had never heard anybody introduce themselves any other way. I'm an alcoholic and I've got 7 years of sobriety. So that baby is born in sobriety. Thank you, God. What a gift. What a gift. So I'll tell you about Grace a little bit later. So then some year and a half or so goes by and I get a call from my family in San Antonio and they tell me that my daddy had an aneurysm in his belly and it ruptured and he died instantly. The grief, the sadness, not getting to say goodbye. My daddy was a healthy man. Played tennis at the aneurysm. So let me tell you what grief looked like for me. First of all, there was gratitude that I had been in Al-Anon and I had done the ninth step. Everything was clean and clear with my daddy. The sadness was, I thought God took him away. I thought that for some reason, I was being punished again because how could this be happening? So I did a lot of anger. I don't think I was angry at God. I was angry at the situation. You know, when people die, I think you're supposed to be there and tell them you love them and say goodbye. That wasn't my experience. So I think I had the anger. But we were, you know, thank God that Bill's sober. I'm in Al-Anon, and there is a loving fellowship surrounding us. So now I'm going to tell you the part of my story that I wish I didn't have to tell you. It's the part of my story that we're going to talk about more in this next hour. With 8.5 years of sobriety, Bill Butler could not live with his humanness, and he committed suicide. I want you to hear two things. AA works. They'll cherish your sobriety. Depression is an illness, and if it goes untreated, it will kill you. Bill had been on and off of antidepressants most of his adult life. He just decided to take himself off. The psychiatrist said it was a moment of insanity. I didn't know how you continue on. I don't know what you do. When your entire life changes in an instant. I called Laura. That's the hardest thing I've ever had to do, to call Laura and Wes. And Laura said, Mom, Daddy loves you so much, he would never do that. And I called Wes and he said, Mom, Daddy would never go off and leave you. He loved you too much. It's not about love. It's about a disease. What you said was true. You told me I would never have to do anything alone again. I called Blanche. She said, Stephanie, you need outside help. This is too big. I got some counseling. What we're going to talk about later on in the workshop is trauma. The counselor that I went to see said to me, you have been traumatized. When your life changes in one instant and will never be the same again, it's called trauma. It is an intense feeling of grief, and it has other characteristics with it. You have been traumatized. I don't know how you continue on. But I do know what God did for me. I had been sitting in meetings with this amazing woman. Her name's Dawn. She called my house and she said, if Stephanie ever needs anything, I'm here for her. It's 26 years ago that Dawn held me in her arms and we sat on her couch and I grieved. I cried for days. It's okay. I didn't do it by myself. I wasn't alone. I learned so much about trauma and about suicide. And in the next hour, I'm going to share with you what I've learned. So the kids wanted me to come home back to Texas, and I said I couldn't. I had a job that I loved, and I was going to stay there. So you know what my experience with grief? I walked into our house 2 years after Bill died, and I said, he's not coming home. It took 2 years for me to get the information from my head to my heart. He's not coming home. You know, they say it takes what it takes. So I called the kids and said, I think I'm coming home. Because I guess I've been sitting in that house waiting for Bill to come home. So Bill was an excellent employee. and he had invested money from, we never had money, but you know, he worked at a place where you put in a dollar and they match it with two and all that sort of thing. So when he died, there's this lump sum of money. I don't know what to do with it. So I decided I'm going to come to Texas and I'm going to buy a new house and I'm going to look for water because I love water and I'm going to try to find a sunset. And sure enough, I just felt like God said, come, let me take care of you. It's going to be okay. I'm looking outside my window right now. I bought this house 24 years ago. It was new then. And the sun sets over Packsaddle Mountain right out my window. So now I am in my home and I am thinking, okay, we're going to turn the chapter. We're going to turn the page. Let's see what happens now. Dawn and I continue to work together. Blanche and I are hooking back up. I have got all the loving support any one person could ever ask for. And so I asked the guy that I invested my money with to please send it down here because I needed to pay for this house. I gave away and sold my furniture in Virginia. Now I don't have much. And Bruce said, the money's on the way. And you know what? The money didn't come. I am in a new house with very little furniture, and I don't have any money. Bruce stole almost $300,000. Here we are. Grief. Oh my gosh. It felt like a death in the family. And you know, I have learned that grief is about death, but it's about so much more. I grieved the loss of what I think Bill expected of me. I don't know. We'll talk about suicide. I'm going to tell you what I believe to be true about that, but I need to tell you where I was at the time. I was feeling guilty. Oh, I should have taken better care of his money. I should have asked more questions. Oh my gosh, this is, and I felt like a death. It felt like a death. It was an enormous loss for me. I have no idea what I'm going to do. So, yay, open AA meetings. Y'all told me to pray for Bruce. So every day, pray for that son, because I cannot. I have the hurt inside of me is so big. I can't do it anymore. I'm done. And so I pray for Bruce. And as it turns out, we did prosecute. He did go to prison for 2 years, and he was ordered to make restitution. And so I get checks every once in a while. And I thank God every time I see that little brown envelope. The first one was $25, but you know, what I need to tell you is that it was never about money, because you know what God did? He built an elementary school 7 minutes from my house. They needed a first grade teacher. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So I start teaching school. At first, I was thinking, well, you know, with all that money, I'm not going to work another day in my life. Well, now there's no money. So guess what? I am working. And I am driving to that little school. And I am teaching first grade. And I have to tell you, it is the biggest blessing. Oh, my gosh. It wasn't about the money. God wanted me back in the classroom. Yes, the money is sad. I mean, it changed my life, right? But it changed my life. Here's the blessing at the end of the darkness. And so what happens is I get all these first graders. They're walking across my soul. Oh my gosh, there's Rosie and there's Steel and there's Loki. And they fill me up. And I am so grateful. And I'm back home again. And I get to see Laura and I get to see Wes. And I get to spend some time with Grace as she's growing up. So I am thinking, this is wonderful. And Blanche and I are hooking up. Although I have to tell you, Blanche was really upset about the money being taken. That really made her, oh my gosh, she could not believe anybody would do that. But Blanche was in an accident. And she ended up in the hospital. And it was very serious. So this was in Temple, Texas, in Granite Shoals, Texas, Marble Falls. Every weekend I drive to Temple. I walk in and I say, Blanche, we've got to get you out of this bed. Come on, girl. We got to get you well. She loved those milkshakes from Sonic. I walked in there every time with a milkshake from Sonic. Oh, come on, Blanche, you can do it. Let's do it. Blanche did not survive her injuries. Ellen, her daughter, called me and she said, if you want to say goodbye to my mom, you better hurry. So I jumped in my little red car and I drove to Temple. And I made a bargain with God. I said, I didn't get to say goodbye to my daddy. I didn't get to say goodbye to Bill. Please, please let me say goodbye to Blanche. And I was holding her hand when she took her last breath. And I could say, I hope you can see the millions of people that you have touched because you were willing to share. Oh my gosh. You know, there's the gratitude. Can you imagine what my life would have been like without Blanche? Can you imagine how I walked through a suicide without Blanche and Dawn? I mean, okay, so I'm gonna tell you another really short story here. They asked me to speak at her service. And so I did. And that morning, Laura calls and she said, Mom, you're going to tell them how important Blanche was to our family, aren't you? I said, Laura, you hated Blanche. She said, Mom, she said, if you had not, Blanche taught you to hold me accountable, to tell me that there were consequences for my choices, and to not accept unacceptable behavior. If it hadn't been for Blanche, I might not be sober today. And I could share that at Blanche's memorial. The lives she touched. How she created this. So I'm teaching school. Yeah, you know, I'm thrilled to death. I'm loving being back home again. I have a home group. Have it today. One day at a time, Marble Falls, Texas, 7:30 Monday nights. Now that we're in Zoom, everybody can come. It's a great meeting, and I'm going to meetings. And I'm Dawn and I now. Dawn has moved from Reston to Chicago, so Dawn is in Chicago. She's sponsoring me long distance, and I get to see her every chance I get. She is amazing. I'm going to take a minute right now to tell you. Dawn is 88 years old. She has been in Al-Anon over 60 years, and she still goes to meetings 2 and 3 times a week. She's even learned how to do it online. It is amazing to me. And I'm going to tell you about her a little bit at the end when I finish talking. So I want to tell you, I want to bring you up to date with everything. That beautiful daughter of mine, that I wanted her to sit down and be like me. Well, she is an amazing, amazing woman today. I want to be just like her. Her husband, 2 weeks ago, had a liver transplant. He's been sober for over 30 years, and he's recovering today. And this woman, who is our child, is amazing. Okay, so Grace grows up and Grace is beautiful and I love Grace. And one time Grace gets with me and she says, Dash, I'm going to tell you. Well, they call me Dash. You don't need to know that story. Anyway, she says, Grandma Dash, I need to tell you something. And I said, what? And she said, I'm pregnant. And I went, oh boy, I learned my lesson. I'm not going to judge this time. And so Grace is going to give us a baby. And this time, I am so excited because I realized what happened the last time. You don't have to be married to have a baby. And the babies are gifts. And they're, I mean, look how Grace has grown up. And isn't this wonderful? Now she's going to give us another. I have a great granddaughter. I can't believe it. So about 3 years ago, a little 3.5 years ago, the joy of my life was born. Her name is Harper. She's 3.5 years old. She is the smartest, cutest, sweetest thing you ever saw in your life. She calls me Dash. I get to come and keep her, usually for one night, one day every week. She's in preschool. And one day she's over here with me and we're making waffles and I did something wrong. And she looks at me and she says, "You know, Dash, there's going to be consequences for that." And I'm going, "How did you know that word?" She said, "My teacher." And I thought, "Oh yeah, I bet your teacher has said that to you. There's going to be consequences for that." So, okay. So Wes, you know, Wes has been writing his story all along. And today when his daddy died, he couldn't live here. He couldn't stay here. It was too much for him. So Wes went to Wyoming. While he was in Wyoming, working on a ranch, the horse threw him and fell on top of him and broke his back. So Wes got hooked on pills. He also then got clean from that and drank a little bit. Anyway, it doesn't make any difference. I want to tell you today, that son is an amazing man. I love him dearly. I don't know if he's an alcoholic or not, and I don't care. I just want him to be healthy. I would like, but you know, whatever. He just knows I love him just like he is. Harper has blessed our family in such a way I can't even tell you. She spends a lot of time with Lauren Brooks. And through this illness of Brooks, she has been a beam of sunshine. So we are grateful for that. So, okay, I've been teaching school and Laura is with me. Well, first I need to get this in here because we're going to talk about this next hour. My mother has dementia and she gets very sick and she ends up in the hospital. We're going to be talking about anticipatory grief. Because my mother is there and we know she's going to die. So now we are anticipating this. I also want you to know that anticipatory grief doesn't just come with death. But anyway, we'll do that in a minute. So we all are anticipating. And then we get to a place where all we want is for her to be at peace. So this anticipatory grief leads to kind of a, she's not suffering. Thank you, God. So shortly after that, my knees are giving me problems. So I go to the orthopedic guy and I said, "You know, can you fix this?" And he said, "How tall are you?" And I said, "I'm 5'2". And he measures me and he says, "No, you're not. You're 4'11". What? What happened to me? If you're standing on concrete for over 34 years, you're discompressed. And I have shrunk. And so, Laura heard that and she said, "So Mom, pretty soon you're going to be on eye level with those first graders. You need to retire." I said, "Can't retire. This is what I do. This is what I love." What I understand today is that I had to grieve. I had to retire. And I didn't want to. The teachers at my school are looking at me and I'm crying and they go, "What's the matter with you? You get to retire." But I went, "I don't want to retire. I love this." I was at a workshop in Kansas not long after that. And I thought I was grieving the loss of my profession. I sat in this workshop and they mentioned, "I am grieving the loss of my youth." I can still teach first grade. I know how to get these little ones to read. I know how to do that. I can't stand in a classroom for hours anymore because of my knees. So then I'm home and I get me a rescue puppy. Her name is Rosie. And I am enjoying going to meetings. And I've got Rosie that I just adore. She's a rescue Springer Spaniel, and she's got more health problems than you can even imagine. I just love her, and she loves me. And I have her for a while, and then I don't. Another grief. It is all over the place. So today, I am so grateful, especially for the literature that we have, for the fellowship that we have, for the loving higher power that has sustained me through my life so far. It's only been 75 years. I think I've got a few more to go. I love the place that I am today, but I also understand that there is so much grief wrapped around all of this, and we need to have the conversation. I want to tell you that Dawn is my sponsor today. I do adore her. I talk to her every day. I sponsor girls. I go to meetings. I am trying to be of service. But the one thing that I think I'm most grateful for is that we do have a fellowship. This grief that I have experienced is no different than yours, although it's mine. And I will, we're going to share in the next hour. We're going to take a few minutes. I wished I had said at the beginning of this, you need a notepad. You need something to write on. You need a box of Kleenexes. You need some chocolate. You need to just be, because this is, I'm going to share in a while, and I want to talk about some of the things that we've talked about as I went through my story. But I am telling you, I don't have any answers for you. This is a individual and universal experience. It's a strong emotion, and we're going to get to talk about it. So I thank you very much for listening. If I've been everywhere, it's okay, because that's what grief does. Meow. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. Yvonne, what do you think? 10, 15 minutes? What do you want? You're muted, Yvonne. I can't hear you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Let's take a 10-minute break. Okay. I'll see you when you get back. Hello, everybody. So a couple of people were asking about the flyer. We have a series of workshops going on. If you want a flyer or you want to be on our mailing list, send us an email to awbroundup@gmail.com. I'll have one of the guys set it in the chat, awbroundup@gmail.com, and we'll send you an email with the flyer and to sign up. And you will automatically get our flyers. And that's all we send out. We don't junk it with anything else. I want to say that we've got coming up on October 17 and 18, Native American Conference. It is AA as well as Al-Anon. We also have some other indigenous people like Samoan and Maori, New Zealand. That we'll be sharing. We have the making of the big book in the Navajo. We have how the 12 steps are translated into Native American customs, medicine, and working the 12 steps. It'll be fun. I think it's fun and exciting because, you know, when you're from Europe, you do not grow up with cowboys and Indians, only on TV for us. Right, Sandor, Copenhagen? I mean, seriously, it's cool. So anyway, if you're interested, that is something that we're going to be making a flyer for this weekend. Or after the weekend, and then I will be putting that one out.